MechCast, Saturday, July 16th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, you know, we're in a little bit of a waiting pattern, it feels like. We were supposed to have Lion, Mac OS X Lion, the latest version of Apple's operating system, released on the 14th, at least according to rumors. I tweeted about this a little bit, the fact that you know, we got rumors on top of rumors, so you never really know what's going on. And until Apple makes a move, that's when we'll find out when this stuff hits. The new date that's being rumored for the release of Lion, I've heard July 26th rolled out. Some people are saying next week, although we have Apple's third quarterly conference financial results call happening on the 19th, Tuesday the 19th. So I'm not sure that that would come out then. We're also hearing rumors that right after Apple releases Lion, we'll see some new MacBook Airs potentially. Also, MacBooks are being rumored. There is a lot of rumors flying around, but not a lot of information at this point. So I thought this would be great. I've been for a couple weeks now trying to put together for you a special on Final Cut Pro 10, Apple's new version of Final Cut. It was much hyped, much anticipated by the professional video community. Apple released it, created some ripples that then turned into waves because the product that came out, I think, was not what the industry was expecting. And if you're not a video professional, you may or may not care. And if you're a hobbyist, someone who likes playing around with iMovie and is maybe looking to take your stuff to the next level, you might care quite a bit. But either way, I think in looking at all of the information and reading through some of the blog posts and things that were coming out throughout the industry, I think what was interesting about it is that it shows a direction that Apple is moving in, and also reaffirms, I think, some of the things many of us already knew about Apple, but maybe not all of us knew about Apple or how Apple behaves in certain situations or runs its business. And so I wanted to get a group of really smart, well-informed, articulate video professionals together. And I spent some time asking around, finding the right people to be on the show, got them together. We scheduled this podcast and it came out great. I'm really excited today to share this episode with you. And whether you're into video or not, I think this is an important episode to listen to because I think a lot of stuff comes out in here about how Apple operates, the future direction of Apple, especially with respect to the pro markets and pro video markets. But these are all aspects of Apple's business, and they've made a lot of changes in terms of their direction. With iOS coming in and iPads, we're seeing them really focusing on the consumer. And I think there is a balance there and there's a change going on at Apple. And I think you'll get some great insights in here. I really asked these guys to come and sort of talk to us, the average Mac user, about why this created such a controversy in the video community. So I think we've done a great job of explaining that. So I'm excited to bring you this episode. I hope you enjoy it. It's a good thing to do while we're having this little lull. We'll be back talking about Lion, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks and all the new features and bells and whistles and that. So stay tuned. But before we dive into the interview, I want to take a quick moment. I want to thank one of our show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. This is an application that I use. I use it for doing a lot of the research and prep for the MacCast. It has a great feature built into it called web clippings, which what that enables me to do, it leverages the services that are built into Mac OS X. And when I'm in Safari or other Cocoa-based applications, I use Reader to do a lot of my RSS reading, read through my news articles and stuff like that. I can highlight and select certain bits of text that maybe I want to include into my notes as I'm doing my show prep, and I can clip those right into specific notebooks and even sections in specific notebooks that I've set up in Circus Pony's notebook. And that way I can quickly go through, I can parse through material, get it all someplace centralized, and then come back and go through that and then start to build out my show notes and do my prep and get my thoughts and ideas organized. So it's great for that sort of thing. It's great for taking notes. It's got a bunch of great tools in it for doing things like voice annotation, annotations. You can bring in PDFs and images that you want to reference. If you have web links that you've thrown in there, it'll index all this stuff, so it'll get it all organized. They have this technology called the Multidex that automatically indexes your content in a bunch of different ways, which makes it really easy to come back through and search and find things. It's just one of those versatile applications that once you have it installed, you'll start using it for different things and you'll find more and more uses for it. So it's just a great application. You should really check it out. They have some great video tutorials on their website. You can get more information and details over at circusponies.com, and they have free trials available. So check it out. And a big thank you to Circus Ponies for their support of the show. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to a bunch of great guys. We had about an hour and a half conversation, so strap in for this one. It's a lot of fun, and you're going to learn a lot. So enjoy. So I want to welcome a couple of video pros to the MacCast. We normally don't get into these kinds of topics, but with the release of Final Cut Pro 10, there's been quite a hubbub created, and I think what we want to do in this episode is drill down to that and really talk to some people who are in the know about what's going on at Apple, what it means to the professional community, and what it means for the future of Apple's, I guess we're still calling them pro video editing products, but I think by the time we end this episode, might be a little bit a new term for that maybe. But let me start just going around with who we have here. We have Richard Harrington, who is the founder of Red Pixel, also worked on official training for Apple's video and photo products, right, Richard?
Yep.
And then I have Ron Brinkman, who is a author, founding member of Sony Picture Image Works, and also actually worked on the team that produced Shake. Hey, Ron.
Hey, great to be here.
And then last but not least, Chris Fenwick, an editor at Slice Editorial. Hey, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Fun to be at the adult table.
Well, we appreciate having you. I want to thank all of you for coming on and talking to the MacCast for a little bit. So I want to start off with just maybe a little bit of background to the whole I don't know if you call it event or the release of Final Cut Pro 10, which was a much anticipated release. And then it came out, we were expecting a lot from it. And then there was a big kind of backlash, especially from the high-end video professional community, it seemed like. And so now we've had a couple weeks, things have, I don't know if they've simmered down, but they've calmed down maybe a little bit, and people are starting to take a different perspective on it. So, I mean, Richard, can you talk a little bit about maybe that buildup or just the history to what was going on right before Apple released Final Cut Pro 10, especially in the pro community, sort of what the expectations were?
I think it actually goes back several years to the last version of Final Cut Studio, the Final Cut Studio 3, and which had Final Cut Pro 7 in it. Mm-hmm. And that release that came out compared to previous versions of Final Cut and Final Cut Studio didn't really add much functionality. You know, it wasn't a 64-bit application, even though, you know, other people were starting to get into that, and there were 64-bit operating systems, there was lots of power, and you know, there was things that competitors' products had that Final Cut Studio still didn't get, and so there was a lot of pent-up demand, and it was kind of a lackluster release. There was good things about it, and really, you know, some really good things, but it didn't address all of the needs. And then, you know, time went by, and I do a fair amount of speaking at Final Cut Pro user groups and, you know, interfacing with people in the Final Cut community through the years. I run a production company, but I spend probably a third of my time sharing what I learn and do, you know, through education materials and resources and conferences. And, you know, people are always asking me, which, you know, when's the next Final Cut coming out? Is it going to do this? Is it going to do this? And it's like, well, first off, nobody knows. You know, Apple's one of the most secret companies in the world, and even the people who do know can't say.
Right.
And so it's like, well, I hope it does that too. You know, wow, I hope it does these things that we're seeing in other products. So there was a lot of pent-up demand with this giant wish list. And really, you know, people were expecting that it was going to do everything that Final Cut 7 did. And, oh, it's going to also add all these other great things that we need too. And then it came out, and it added a few great things, and it took away 70% of what Final Cut Pro 7 could do. It could no longer do. And so, wait a minute. I've waited basically 4 years to give up functionality? That was a pretty big shock to a lot of people.
Right. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Well, yeah, and I think
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of issues with sort of Apple's way they dealt with this announcement, and it just kind of goes to Apple's DNA in general, and the fact that, you know, this is how they operate. And I was there for many years, and I came, you know, when I worked for the company that was acquired by Apple, and so we came from being a small company that was very focused on our customers and had an incredible amount of customer interaction that really drove the product. And then suddenly, as a part of Apple, it was not the case anymore at all. And, you know, I wrote a little blog post about this, sort of detailing how the world changed whenever Apple acquired us. And in fact, we sat in a room with a lot of visual effects professionals, and Steve came in and talked to them and basically told them that, you know, the world was changing and that Apple was no longer going to be providing the same kind of, you know, roadmaps that we were accustomed to providing about the future of the product. But on the other hand, we were going to be providing, we as Apple were going to be providing, you know, a real almost order of magnitude change in price performance kind of stuff. And I think, you know, that's just the way Apple works, right? Is they don't talk about the future. They just announce it. They do it. And most of the time that works extremely well for them. There's a lot of reasons why they do it that way. They get an incredible amount of publicity, free publicity, by not revealing product roadmaps and just having them be event sort of things. And, you know, you couldn't buy the cover of Time magazine, but by doing it the way they do, they get the cover of Time magazine
several times.
Yeah, exactly. And so I certainly can't, you know, and I'm coming at this from the perspective of a very kind of really, I think, a fairly neutral position. I mean, there are things that, you know, I went through that I wasn't particularly happy about, but overall, I totally understand why Apple does things the way they do, and I certainly can't complain. As a stockholder, I certainly can't complain about their way of working. But, you know, in this case, their overall corporate strategy, it did not do them any favors in terms of the goodwill of the professional community, at least the high-end professional community, I guess.
You mentioned something in there, and I want to ask Chris about this, and you guys can chime in on it as well. But you said, you know, Steve came in and said they're going to change the whole price performance ratio thing. And I'm thinking back to, you know, I worked at an ad agency probably 10, 12 years ago, and everything was Avid, and they were these huge systems. And this was kind of before the rise of Final Cut. So is a lot of what was happening in the pro community before the release of Final Cut Pro 10, I mean, Apple had a rapid rise, and I think a lot of that was due to that price performance change, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I think what happened 10 or 12 years ago, a lot of it is kind of forgotten based on the ubiquitousness that Final Cut has received in a lot of areas. Not everybody, believe it or not, is using Final Cut, but in the beginning, there was a lot of resistance to, but I don't understand this. Where's all the hardware cards to support it? You know, where's all the, you know, the stuff under the hood? What do you mean? I'm just editing in code? I don't understand. How is that possible? And I know for myself, I resisted for about 2 years before I said, okay, you know, I got $30,000 into my Media 100 system here. I don't trust a $1,000 application. And then you go, well, okay, this isn't so bad. And so I think people forget how expensive it was, and we just seem we've been lulled into this sort of middle ground where this kind of, you know, dare I say, low-end application in that it's not supported by a bunch of hardware mm-hmm. is actually doing a lot of really pro work. And, you know, what Richard was saying, I can't remember if it was before the show, I think it was before the show, before we started recording, was that it's nice when there's a lot of people available that have been able to learn this thing. And part of the reason why there's a lot of people using it is that it is affordable. So in terms of cost performance, when you drop the application from, you know, I'm going back to 1998 myself here, from a $30,000 Media 100 to a $1,000 box of code, it's like, that's kind of mind-numbing. You know, that's crazy. And yet, I was able to do more things with the $1,000 code than I could with the $30,000 hardware-supported Media 100 system. Right. So, yeah, it's substantial when you drop the price. It really is.
Right, but have they gone? I mean, so is the feeling now that maybe they've gone too far in that other direction, in that cost performance direction, and taken out too much performance for people?
I don't think it's about price.
No, I mean, it's not about price. It's about seats. It's like, how many people can we get sitting behind this? Now, it helps when it's cheaper, but that's not really I really believe that somewhere along the line, somebody sat in a boardroom at Apple and said, okay, well, if we change all this stuff, how many pro users are we going to use? And some analyst or some guy in a, you know, a mock turtleneck said, I don't know, 40, 50,000 people? Okay, screw them. Let's gain 1 million soccer dads.
Yep. I think that's exactly right. You know, and that's, I mean, Apple is not, they don't do a lot of market analysis. They really don't. It surprised the hell out of me whenever I got there, and, you know, having worked at other large companies, that they do a lot of gut feeling kind of stuff. But there, you know, there's a little bit of surveying. But I think that basically they realized that those numbers you quoted were exactly what they were looking at, is that, you know, this is about getting people addicted to the Mac platform. And, what? You know, the other point I made is that the high-end professionals, they're harder customers to have. You know, they're very demanding.
Yeah, I've always said it's kind of like tires. If you're Goodyear and you make tires for every Ford and Chevy, it's like, okay, well, what's a tire? Well, it's round. It's got a hole in the middle of it. It's made of rubber. It doesn't seem so hard to do. So let's make a crap load of tires. And then you go to, you know, a NASCAR track and you say, hey, you guys need some tires? And they go, well, yeah, we do, but we need some really good tires. And it's like, that's hard. Never mind. We'll just make tires for Fords and Chevys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easier to appeal to the soccer dad and the, you know, the indie filmmaker, the guy who doesn't have to interact with a bunch of other people. It's like, you know, and frankly, if you're that guy, if you don't know what OMF and XML are, and you don't have to, you know, put your stuff on a broadcast monitor and check things on a scope, and, you know, you're probably going to like this. If you've never used Final Cut Pro because it was too expensive, you might really enjoy this app.
Well, can I actually go in that direction for a second? Because one of the things that I have had the benefit of doing is, you know, I've always been involved in the entire spectrum. You know, I come from a family of educators. And so while I work in the high-end pro, I've taught lots of levels. And so you know, I've done official stuff for iPhoto and Aperture, and I think that Aperture here was really the test that led to this change. You know, when Aperture came out, and Ron helped me here, didn't it ship as like a wasn't it $9.99 initially, and then it immediately went to $4.99?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact pricing, but yes, it certainly came out at a high price point. And, you know, that was obviously a very troubled launch too. I was there through that and actually worked on Aperture a little bit right before the release and a fair bit of time after the release.
And then it immediately went to a lower price, mm-hmm. and they did a credit. And then Aperture 2 came out, and it was down to like $2.99. And then Aperture 3 came out, and it was like $1.99. And then they launched the Mac App Store, and they said, well, let's just put Aperture up here for a personal use license. Not a professional license, a personal use license that you're not supposed to use in a pro environment, but you can use on as many Macs as you own. And, you know, we're going to lower that price, and it's going to be, I think it's $49. I just clicked on it to double check.
$79.
Yeah. There we go. So obviously they lowered the price again. Well, what did it do for them? It went crazy. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we released a new Aperture podcast. I've had an Aperture podcast crack the top 10 on all podcasts of iTunes. There's a huge demand for this product. Is it Photoshop? No. Is it Lightroom? Does it have the respect of either of those two products? No. But it actually helps a lot of people, and it serves a really broad base of people who graduated from iPhoto into Aperture, and the price barrier seemed reasonable to them. Well, what's the third best top money-making app on the App Store? It's Aperture. Right above it is Apple Pages, a $19 program, and above that right now is Final Cut Pro. From the first day that Aperture was added to the App Store, it has been in the top three top-grossing apps. So here's an app that started at $1,000 and is now down to $79, and nobody really complained.
And, you know, and I think that Apple looks at software like this much differently than a software company does, right? Because for
it
them,
sells machines.
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, I would, and it's also it's almost like an accessory kind of thing. You know, it's like you buy an iPad and you can get the leather cover, and that's an extra you know, whatever percentage of the cost of the thing is, it just goes straight to Apple, right? And a lot of people buy the Apple branded cover, and it's cool. It's got a lot of features, and it's the kind of thing where you sort of look at it and you're like, ah, I may as well, right? And I really think that in some ways, certainly in the case of something like Aperture, it's almost that same thing where, you know, they know they're going to get a certain percentage of people. And by that, I mean a large percentage, not a fraction of a percentage, who are going to say, you know, I'm a photography guy and I want to have the highest end tool that they make. And that's just going to be part of my Apple system. So for them, I think it's more of an incremental revenue as opposed to a company that is, you know, just basing their entire corporate identity and revenue stream.
Yeah, like Adobe. Adobe has to write good code because that's what they sell. Apple sells Macs, and the software is basically, you know, it's kind of an afterthought as long as you buy the Apple dongle.
But you know, you're characterizing it, though, as Apple doesn't have to write good code, and I don't think that's fair because
I'm not saying that they don't.
I use Aperture for a reason. I prefer Aperture over Lightroom, and you know, the Apple does make great software that many people find intuitive, and you know, Apple seems to, you know, I've heard the instruction that our software should be so intuitive that it doesn't require a user manual, mm-hmm. come out of very high levels of desires when describing Apple software. And so I think they make some very good software, and Final Cut Pro 10 is a very good piece of software program. It's just not Final Cut Pro 7. Had it just been called Final Cut 10, yeah. And the pros would have said, oh, well, okay, this is interesting. This is a really cool engine. I see some things here I really like. Okay, so, well, I'm already a Final Cut Pro customer. Final Cut Pro is going to continue to exist, and I'm going to keep working in this. They've committed to maintenance releases. It's going to be there. You know, they're not going to do a new version, but they'll keep this version working for the next 2 years. And over that period, you know, there's going to be two more updates to Final Cut, and Final Cut 10 is going to be the new product. And when you're ready to jump, you know. But we understand that for some of you, you need to be able to hand off certain materials for your feature film, or you need to be able to do this certain workflow for broadcast television. And we're not there yet. We freely admit it. So keep using you're using. We support it. We're going to keep selling it. It's there. No problem. And we're going to keep – but this is where we're putting all of our development. This is the future. So why don't you start to learn this and play with it? And in a couple of years when we're both ready, it's going to be awesome. But that's not what happened.
Well, just to be clear, that's Richard's fantasy world, right? That didn't really happen, right? Because that would have been okay.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's the point, right? Is that, you know, if there are heads rolling around the aisles of Cupertino, which I'm not sure there are, but if there are any sort of recriminations going on, I really have to believe that none of that finger pointing is going towards the engineering team or the design team. It's all going towards the marketing and the messaging of how this was rolled out. And even then, I'm not convinced that, you know, the people that chose the way this was marketed weren't really high up, and you know, kind of there's not going to be too many fingers to be pointed because it was up to the top level where that messaging was chosen.
Well, I think, Adam, too, for the benefit of your audience, we need to explain that when Final Cut Pro 10 came out, what actually happened on that day. It wasn't just that a new piece of software shipped.
Right.
A new piece of software shipped that had hardware requirements for certain systems, and you had to have a certain graphics card and a certain type of Mac, and you know, it wasn't even just a system qualified to run Lion. It had to have certain features in it. So people, you know, found out, oh, well, here's the system requirements for the new software. Oh, my computer can't actually run that. Well, I was waiting to buy Final Cut Studio. Well, I'm going to buy that. No, wait. At the exact same time that Final Cut 10 came out, they discontinued Final Cut Studio.
Right.
And they discontinued Final Cut Express. And all of those higher-end users who had also woven Final Cut Server through their large institutions or their feature film, you know, their large workflow, their broadcast workflow, oh, by the way, we killed that too. We know we were just telling you last year how awesome it was, and you invested tons of money in servers and hardware. But that's gone with zero warning, and that's why people freaked out. It wasn't just that something new came out. It was that the entire ecosystem, it was sort of like, you know, God came down and just said, you know what? I don't like this planet anymore. it's gone. And oh, here's this new one over here.
Okay, so cool. I want to back up a little bit because we were moving in that direction, and I want to get to some of those things, some of those concerns when Final Cut came out. You know, just kind of describing in hopefully layman's terms, kind of the key features that have been lost that the video professionals are kind of the most upset about. And leading up to that, though, was this conversation we were having earlier where Apple dropped the price point. They spent the past 12 years building up a devoted, large following, I think, of video professionals using Final Cut Pro 7, right? And we talked at the top of the show about there were some things missing and there were a bunch of expectations given. And I don't know if you guys remember, but I remember a few months back before the release of Final Cut Pro 10, they even had, and I don't know if this was Apple marketing or who was doing this, but they had it seemed like they had leaked some stuff to some key video professionals who were saying, this is going to be the most amazing upgrade ever, and everybody's going to love this. And
it wasn't a leak. There was two meetings that took place. One was a small group of influencers who own TV stations and large schools were invited in, and you know, they got a sneak peek demo. And then at NAB, at the Final Cut Pro users group, they gave another sneak peek demo. Mm-hmm. And everything they said that was going to be there was there, and all the cool things they showed ended up being there. But what made people mad was they did this thing where they said, here's your project in Final Cut 7.
Yes.
And here's what it looks like in Final Cut 10. You know, what they didn't say is, oh, by the way, you can't move anything between the two programs. And we also took all this other stuff out. I mean, it's really easy. If I wanted to get you excited, you know, and you are a photographer, I could tell you all these great new features on this camera that I'm getting ready to sell you. And it does this, and there's all these incredible things, and you have this. Oh, by the way, we left out all those ports. There's no USB port, and the memory doesn't pop out of the camera. So you need to buy this new proprietary computer that we just started shipping, and that'll connect to it wirelessly. But it's not as fast as what you might be used to. But wires just don't look good. They're so cluttered on your desk, so you don't need those wires.
This is the Apple way, right? This is what they do. Is it really
we're not shocked.
Big of a surprise?
Well, yeah,
it is to the fanboys, Ron. It's not to those of us who have had to step back and say, wow, last year I spent $80,000 on wasted time and hard drives converting to ProRes when I didn't need to with Adobe or Avid. But for the people who buy into and like the feeling of going to the mall and seeing other people using the computers and that community feeling that many people don't get when you're a geek and you're working technical in the office. I'm not saying that the Apple stores are little meccas or churches by any means, but unlike other manufacturers, you know, there is a coolness of being an Apple user. We all, you know, come on, everybody's enjoyed flipping out their iPad when they got it before the neighbor did and they pre-ordered it and they were the first one to have it. You're in the coffee shop and someone, is that the iPad too? Why, yes, it is. Did you get the 64 gig model? Oh, yes, and 3G. I mean, come on, we're all geek snobs. And if we want to admit it or not, you know, there is a certain coolness to Apple and we all enjoy it. How many of your listeners have clothes with Apple logos on them?
Probably quite a few. I have several in my closet.
I've been to a whole bunch of stores.
Do you have that for any other technology company?
No,
sir.
No, I'm an unapologetic Apple fanboy, so I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I
but, I mean, do you really think, I guess my question is, in spite of the, okay, I don't think that many people should have been all that surprised by it, but on the other hand, I guess the other question is, do you really think this has hurt Apple in
not
any
at all.
Substantial
my stock's
way.
Way up.
Yep.
I think yours is too, right?
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing here, I think the video professionals, as I mentioned earlier, we're basically considered collateral damage.
Yeah.
I think as Ron agreed, you know, somebody decided, you know, this is okay. It's okay to turn our back on the seasoned professionals, because ultimately what we're looking at, and I can't believe I'm actually about to do this, but what we're looking at is a pretty good piece of code. And if you look at like the key things, like I've spent a lot of time like just kind of looking at this and pondering it and, you know, tinking around in it thinking, you know, what the hell? I mean, why were some of these things changed? And basically where I settled on it was, if you think about training a new editor. And it just anybody who's never done it. Now, a lot of us, we haven't sat with somebody who's brand new in a long time. I know Richard does because he does a lot of training. But if you look at like the main things that a new editor has problems with, and then you were to sit back and go, okay, how can I make that new user never have that problem? You know, and so like there's a couple of things that I like kind of noticed. Like, for example, you know, if you take a guy who's, you know, got spurious flash frames in his piece, well, you know, you're not butting your clips up against each other. Well,
little
look at
gaps where black pops up because we're sloppy edits.
Yeah. So we can fix that. We'll call it the magnetic timeline, or I call it the tilted to the left timeline where everything slides to the left. So now that I've fixed that, guess what? The soccer dad, he's never going to have a flash frame again. Or you take something like, I moved this one soundbite and now all my B-roll's out of sync. Well, we're going to fix that by having sub-storylines with, and I don't know what they call it, Richard, maybe you know, that little locking thing that goes from the upper track and, you know, tinks on to the lower track. So that's now tied to that inextricably. And as you move the one thing around, they both move together.
So that's where you can lock and edit the audio.
Exactly. Or the other one, and I thought this was interesting because it really ticked me off for a long time. A lot of amateur editors, they'll take a sub clip, they'll drop it into a timeline, then they try and do their dissolve, and they can't do a dissolve. And that's because they're trying to dissolve without handles. Well, a soccer dad doesn't know what a handle is. So if I have, you know, and in the preferences, there's the first time I tried to do a dissolve on something with without a handle, I realized my TRT is changing. The TRT shouldn't change when you put a dissolve between two clips.
Yeah, but the runtime of the sequence.
Yeah, sorry, total runtime, the TRT. Yeah. So and Final Cut's doing that for me because it assumes I don't know what a handle is.
Right. Now, it's a very Microsoft-like product in that it's filled with wizards and things that try to help you. Mm. There's a lot of assisted editing. I've spent the last 3 years working with photographers who've been trying to learn video and you know, the rise of DSLR video and all of these things. And you've nailed it, Chris. I'm not saying that this is perfect for all DSLR folks, but I did my own test in the office, and we brought it in. And I let some of the folks in the office play with it. I also grabbed some of the producers and people who don't edit. And a couple of the people who have no editing skills and really don't do any editing and didn't have much editing classes, some of them said, oh, I kind of like this. This makes sense. This is cool. You know, and about half of them didn't. Well, the thing there is all of a sudden you took something that most people don't find intuitive. Video editing is not intuitive. It's hard. It's complex. It's really deep and layered.
And I get paid for it.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, it's just like page layout. You know, a true page layout program versus Apple Pages. You know, you don't need to specify the bleed for printing, and you don't need to be able to actually set the angle or specify a Pantone number. That's ridiculous, you know, and you can't do that in Pages. Right. But, you know, Apple Pages is good enough for a lot of people who need to go print things and just get it output at Kinko's, you know, or send it to an online printer through the web. And it's perfect for them. And I use Apple Pages a lot in my company, although I still need to fire up InDesign for certain projects. Well, you know, I think that Final Cut Pro sort of took that mentality, and you nailed it there, Chris. It's for people who didn't like video editing before, this is a whole new paradigm. And if you thought video editing before was difficult or convoluted or you hated it, you're probably going to like this. Or at least there's a 50-50 chance you're going to like this. And that's what Final Cut Pro 10 does. There's a lot of people who previously found video editing confusing who get Final Cut Pro 10. However, in my mind, the more you know about video editing, the harder Final Cut 10 is because you're constantly hitting limitations where it's like, well, no, just go down here and I drag something and it snaps back. Well, no, actually, I want you here. Well, let's move it. Oh, wait, no, the whole thing just changed. Oh, I want to, you know, all these things where it's thinking for you and is trying to control what you're doing. It makes it very difficult. Now, there is some good training that's come out, you know, Ripple Training, lynda.com just had a title come out. A lot of really good Final Cut trainers who I know and respect releasing good materials to try to make this transition easier. You know, however, I will say other software companies would have disclosed a large number of people in the training community and would have brought those people into the offices and do day-long workshops and train people. That's what other software companies do. So when a product comes out, there's tons of documentation and training and resources and workshops.
Okay.
The people who are Apple certified trainers are just getting trained now.
So I'm sitting here listening, and I want to give you guys an outsider's perspective, because I'm not a pro video editor. I use iMovie, and I absolutely love it. I'm probably the guy who's going to really love, you know, Final Cut Pro 10 when I get my hands on it.
Probably will.
But
and that's not meant as an insult, just to be clear.
No, I don't see it as that. But what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing in the conversation that we're having here, and there's a bigger thing going on with Apple. It seems overall Apple over the last 5 years to me has moved more and more. Well, they've always been a consumer company, but it seems like they're more and more focused on the consumerization of products, making them doing the things that they've always done. But I think it's even more blatant now or more upfront now. And
like their server and tower line, right?
Yeah, they got rid of that. They haven't been really updating the Mac Pros as much. We're hearing things like, I think Barefeet's just did some reviews of Final Cut Pro 10 on iMacs, and in certain cases, it performing better than some of the Mac Pros. So you see strange things like that. And then I guess what confuses me is, especially in the pro video area, it seems like Apple spent a long time and a lot of energy building up a pro community for Final Cut. And now, like you guys have mentioned, they sort of just cut it off and said, nope, here is the product. And as you guys are mentioning, there's a lot of features in there that seem targeted at really the consumer. They're doing pro-level things, but sort of masking that or hiding it in a way. And that takes away for pros
the Here's a beautiful-looking title, but it's a template.
Yeah, and it
Here's a beautiful-looking look with a color grade. Oh, but you can't modify it.
Right. And that it hampers your workflow. And so I know Apple has said, we're going to fix some things. They put out that whole FAQ. But, I mean, are you guys really buying it? Is this Apple saying, look, we're not doing pro video apps anymore. We're not doing pro photo apps. We're going to target the guys that are buying, you know, the new mid to high-level hardware that want to do the stuff pro editors are doing but don't have the time to train and figure out
I think it's an internal conflict, because I know some great people who are still on the team, and I've heard stories of fights that had to go for things to stay in there. And there are some features in the program that are 100% for pros, you know, and that I'm sure were great arguments. I mean, you know, Ron, you should take more of this, because you know a lot more about software development than I do. But, you know, I've heard a lot of stuff, and I know a lot of great people who are still there who've designed incredible software that really benefits pros. And so I think there's plenty of people still on the app who want it to be the app for pros and want it to, you know, they want to help their customers. I mean, the optical flow and some of the technology that's in there is incredible, some of which came from Shake, you know. So there's certainly high-end stuff there. But
yeah,
to anybody to actually go, well, if you had to choose between these 20 things, and you only be able to have five, which five would you actually need, and which 15 would you be willing to give up now? You know, it's sort of like they made that decision without asking anybody.
They probably did ask some people, and they have enough people on the design and the development team that have, you know, been talking to customers for years and years to have a pretty good idea about a lot of these decisions. You know, I think that it's more the case of, you know, something like optical flow. Yes, a very potentially a high-end feature, but also something that applies to everybody. You know, you want to get rid of your shaky camera, right? And that's not just something that a pro wants to do. And I think it's the features that are really and truly pro only. And you know, and even here, I should characterize it's not really pro so much as high-end pro. There are plenty of real professionals. I think it's a little elitist to just you know, try and draw a line for what's considered a pro or not, versus what I would really call the high-end professional that's working in a sort of a work group environment. These are the things that started to get dropped off, the XML and OMF support, which is, you know, communication tools between in for a work group kind of a thing. That's the kind of stuff that tended to go away, whereas the high-end
But I know features, a ton of people doing wedding videos and event videos, and even in my own company, we do a lot of web video. Mm-hmm. Multi-camera is damn near essential to our workflow.
Multi-camera is a huge one, and I have to believe, you know, that one, I'd put any amount of money that is on their upcoming feature list, and it just got dropped out of.
But they did say it would be in the next major version in their FAQ, which, right.
which is a bummer because they tend to take about 2 years to do.
Yep. And I get it.
Version. But the major version needs a paid version, not a free update. Yep.
So. Yeah. And, you know, but that one certainly smells like it was a decision that was made on engineering resources, not a decision that was made on sort of market targeting. Whereas something like the XML and the OMF, I think that's a market targeting decision that you may see coming back into the product.
I agree with you on the targeting thing on that. My response on something like multicam, which does affect so many people and was a reason why Final Cut was so wildly adopted, because you can only do four angles on Premiere Pro currently, and Avid multicamera was a very expensive option. I know a lot of people doing concerts and films and plays and, you know, weddings and events that used multicamera a lot. You said that it was probably there wasn't enough engineering resources. Last I checked, they probably could have afforded to buy a few more engineers if it was important.
It is a good point, but it's also having been, you know, inside of Apple, inside of the Pro Apps group, and other companies too. You know, there are budgets that are set aside, and these subgroups within an organization don't have unlimited resources, and they have to make a really strong case for doing that. And at some level, it does come down to, you know, What's the cost benefit analysis? What's the return on an investment? If you buy an engineer and put him on Final Cut versus buying an engineer and putting him onto iPhone development, right? Which one engineer is going to return more revenue for the company in general?
Three years ago, I was doing a lot of video for Apple in their online seminars division, and I was working with all the Pro Apps people, and we were doing a lot of videos for the Pro Apps. All those people got pulled off of Pro Apps and are now out pimping iPhones to corporate America.
Or at least get temporarily pulled off and pulled back on. You know, that's
they're
pulled
all
off
still pimping phones. iPhones, but yeah.
But yeah, you know, that's another thing that's very typical of Apple, is that when it comes to crunch time and the poop is hitting the fan, it's not uncommon for organizations to get sort of reallocated and teams to get pulled off of stuff either temporarily or permanently and put to other stuff. And that's just smart business in the way that Apple works. But I don't know. I think it still kind of goes back to where they're going to focus, and what we're going to see coming next is still going to be things that are designed for the broader kind of an editorial audience.
Well, I did want to throw one other thing out there, and we keep saying that only pros are unhappy. You know, when you look at the App Store reviews and the scale that's in there, you know, your choices are to give it 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 stars. So that's pretty straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. So if you take that, and I just crunched the numbers because I had done this last night. I was curious. I was trying to, you know how they often say, like, you know, if you say to people, oh, you know, the U.S. is $20 billion in debt or $20 trillion in debt, the average person just can't visualize the difference in those numbers because it's not something that they look at. Mm-hmm. You know, a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 star rating, oh, it's like a 3. So that's pretty good. You know, it seems like that's pretty good. Well, when you crunch the numbers, and I just did it, you know, and you take the number of votes, you know, the score right now is a 2.88 out of 5. Well, let's take that to an academic scale. So if you had 5 as the maximum number, 5 would be 100%, and 0 would be, you know, would be the lowest. The current score, and only people who bought the app could vote, is 57% in the U.S. store. Well, they got a 57%.
That's not very good, is it?
A 57% is not passing. So, you know, that's not...
Lies, damn lies, and statistics, or whatever, right? It's,
I know, what if you're unhappy, is what I'm trying to say. There are
but
other.
My point would be, if you, what if you throw away all the, can you give a 0 star or 1 star? But if you throw away all the, star. Okay, so if you throw away all the lowest ones, which is people.
Can we throw out the East German judge?
So exactly. If I throw out all the 5 stars and the 4 stars and the 1 stars?
No. I'm saying if you throw out all the, throw out all the 5 stars and the 1 stars.
Okay, if I do that, it's a 3.06, and that is a 61%.
Bottom line is, they did not do a very good job.
I have to ask though too, how much of that is? I mean, there was a lot of instant reactionary stuff, you know, early on, and then
I've been tracking this for the last 2 weeks. The lowest the average got was about a 2.55, and it has not gone over a true 3.
Okay, but my point is, I think a lot of people are. you know, if you're really happy with an app, you tend, you're probably much less likely to go in and give it a high rating than if you're really unhappy with an app. You see that all the time. And I mean, I've done analysis of this kind of stuff when I worked at Amazon, and we had the same kind of things with, you know, Amazon's rankings. And there's all kinds of stuff they do to kind of try and understand the way people behave when they're ranking things.
I think it's very telling that, you know, right now, I just looked at the store. There's 567 five-star reviews, 175 four-star, 133 three-star, 148 two-star, 705 one-star.
And that's my point. Those one-star reviews are...
And the five-star reviews are... If you're going to knock out the one-star, you got to knock out the five-star.
I actually don't necessarily agree with that. Just based on bias of...
I want to get past...
It's math talk.
Like star ratings. What I want to get to for my audience is, I mean, is it a bad product then? Are we saying this is a bad update? Because I don't think we're saying that.
It's not an update.
I think the very clear thing is that it's not an update. And there was some... I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody, and I would love to talk to somebody from Apple that could defend the marketing decisions that they've done. I really don't think you can. And I think they've stolen a name, and I think they've given it to a brand new product. And I think they're trying to ride on the coattails of that name. And that being said, I think the brand new product is okay. It's not a professional product. It will yield some nearly professional results with a good operator on it. But it's not a pro product in terms of interoperability and the ability to monitor on a proper monitor or even to open up the last decade of your work, which is a really big problem.
It's not a high-end professional product.
Okay, I'll give you that.
But again, you know, as much as Apple liked to talk about, you know, this movie was, you know, Cold Mountain was edited in Final Cut or whatever.
I'm going to strongly disagree on that because when people keep saying high end, they keep thinking, oh, well, we're talking about people doing films and TV. I've been talking to tons of people in the DC community who are nonprofit trade associations. I've got Children's National Medical Center who have 10 years of footage organized in Final Cut Pro and logged and tagged and organized their entire library. I've got another group that's a political association that was using Final Cut Server and, you know, bear the cost of getting everything organized. You know, this is not just film and TV prima donnas who are complaining here. There's a large quantity of folks who basically video departments or need for video grew beyond one person who would work on a project from start to finish on their iMac and publish it. These are the people who are affected, the people who actually had a team, and that team could have only been two, and had the need for a library of assets from a period of time that they worked on, and they drew benefit to that. This is not just film and TV people being prima donnas because, oh my God, you know, did you see what was in the gift bag at the Emmys this year? How could they?
Okay.
This is real people who are affected. These are people who have normal jobs, who are communications professionals, who maybe make video some of the time, and, you know, they also do web and they do other things. That's not to say that the new Final Cut can't be useful for them, but it's not just high-end pros.
I think that's an excellent point. Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point, and fair enough, right? And I do agree that think that at some point, relatively soon, you're going to see a few things happen. You're going to see Final Cut 7 going back for sale at some point. I just have to believe that's probably going to happen there. And I think the other thing that
didn't they already announce that in London last week?
That Final Cut 7 would be able to bulk license it.
Bulk license, yeah. Not license.
Yeah, so just a little perspective on, you know, when we discontinued Shake, you know, our market still was very much the feature film movie industry folks, right? And we knew that Shake discontinuation was inevitable at some point. We saw that coming, and... it actually worked out probably about as well as it could have, and I was reasonably happy with what we were able to do for our customers in that situation, which was we went ahead and made the source code to Shake available to some of the highest end customers so they could continue to use it and work with it until they managed to find a solution to it. And I think that Apple's going to see that same kind of issue, if it really is, you know, continues to be such an uproar, and they'll look into something. It's not going to be to the level of revealing source code, but it will probably include some better migration tools, or at least providing some third-party solutions for doing some of these migrations. I think, you know, if Apple's smart, and they are, I think that they have to be looking at what are the features that would take this up to a higher-end professional kind of a tool that could be done by an outside person instead of by Apple directly.
So and your $1,000 software package is now a $6,000 software package by the time you get done adding on all these missing features.
No, so your $300 package goes back to being a $1,200 package by the time you add all these stuff back on.
Well, XML is out already, and that's $500 right there. So.
No. And that's the but that's the first release of it with no competition, right? So when's the next one going to come out? When's the iPad version for $999 going to come out? You know, it's.
I have heard from a lot of plugin developers because one of the things that I do in my line of work is, you know, I producing training materials. I often get early access to stuff, and you know, I've talked to a lot of plugin developers, and a lot of them have basically said to me, we don't know when our stuff's going to come out because we still don't have the necessary software development kits, or there's these bugs we can't get around yet. And so we don't know when it's coming. So again, you know, yes, we're complaining about a product that's only 2 weeks old, fine, 3 weeks old at this point. Why are you being so complaining? Everything's going to get fixed.
Maybe.
Let's take this in another direction. Let's, you know, what's a product that you use a lot, that, you know, that you use professionally a lot to get your job done?
GarageBand.
Right. And besides, but do you have, so okay, we'll use GarageBand. Yeah. Let's, you know, you use GarageBand. Okay, that's great. Except we're going to discontinue the export formats that you need to publish to these other directories. But that's okay. Just export in this one format and then open in these other apps that you have to buy now to do that. And
right.
That's fine. Oh, well, do you have templates for your show? Like, you know, the music and the open that you've built and
you, you
know,
won't be needing those anymore.
Well, you can't use those anymore. Oh, and well, you know, you maybe you do episode artwork or you do the enhanced AAC3 version and the AAC version. Well,
nobody's arguing that there are pain points here, right? That there are going to be places where certain people are going to get burned. But I think, you know, the point I was making is that there will be ways around the most major pain points eventually.
I followed that. But the problem is the eventually statement. So yeah, that's fine. It's okay to say there's going to be pain points. But I don't buy it's a version 1.0 product argument. Because when I launch it, it says it's version 10.0. And it's not like we're inventing a program that didn't exist before,
right.
You know.
So, but again, you're complaining about the messaging. Then are you saying that you would be totally fine with all of this had it been labeled something else, right?
If it had been labeled something else, and I had a commitment from the company saying we will, you know, Final Cut 7 is not an end of life product. We, you know, it's going to be or it's end of life, but it will be supported through this date, and these are the features that are currently missing that we intend to add, and these other things we don't intend to add. Not when it's coming or when you can expect an update or any of those things, but you know, Avid, Adobe, all those guys have been completely transparent, at least with the big picture stuff of what can you expect and what's coming and when can you, you know, everyone knew when the next version of Media Composer was coming and everyone knows when the next three versions of Creative Suite are coming and, you know, and we know what's being worked on. Secrecy sells iPads and secrecy sells the next version of the iPhone. But as a professional who's got 11 employees that I need to keep fed and clients that from 10 years worth of work that I have to know I can continue to access to help my clients and, you know, stay in business, secrecy does mean no good whatsoever.
You know, but it's just not the way Apple works, right? And it's amusing to me that I am somewhat defending their position on this, given the fact that the entire time I was there at Apple, I was constantly hammering on everybody that we cannot treat our professional customers this way. This is how we have to interact with them. We have to tell them what's coming. We have to discuss new features.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I was doing this constantly. But on the other hand,
I'm not surprised by this. But the reason why you want to say, why are the pros reacting so strongly to you, Ron, and to someone like myself and Chris, we don't have the same – I'm not saying we have insider information, but we have more experience dealing with the company. We have more experience dealing with software companies in general than the average creative pro. Previous to this, the average Final Cut user and the people who discovered Final Cut and found it went to a trade show where there was an official Apple classroom, and they saw it and they got hands-on, and they went to user groups that Apple sponsored and, you know, gave money to, and there's all these great local events, and you were part of a really cool community.
Yeah,
there's great Final Cut user groups.
That's, I mean, that's Apple from a different era, right?
That's, yeah, right. It's, but it's, that's what people are – but people didn't catch on to that, and, you know, everyone was so hopeful for the next release. And they had that Apple from another era, and that Apple from another era needed its pro community. Mm-hmm. I think it's been about 3 years since they've actually needed the pro community. Right. They don't.
Yeah, I think the real pain point here is that in the last, let's say, 15 years, we have seen a bell curve. And that bell curve started on the low end of, you know, Apple making beige G3s. And then it ended today with, you know, let's call it Final Cut 10. But somewhere in the middle of that bell curve, there was a real focus on the creative professional.
Yeah.
They made applications for us to cut in. They made hardware for us to cut on. They made servers for us to store stuff in. And they acted, they
worked with third party companies like AJA to ship hardware that supported
the creative professional.
Yeah, and what point in time? Which give me an approximate date for when you think the best part of that bell curve was, the tip of that bell curve?
I would say, and I'm guessing, and I probably have a jilted opinion, but I'd say about 05, 06.
I was going to say 2006.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, and I would say that maybe it was even a little bit sooner. But okay. And when did the iPod come out?
2001.
2001. So yeah, I would contend.
So all of a sudden, there's this shiny object over here going, "Hey, look at us! We could sell music for 99 cents a piece." Yes. So what we're seeing is that Apple, and I really think that it kind of goes with Steve. I think Steve has always wanted to be kind of like Sony. And I think Apple can buy Sony now, if I'm not mistaken. Probably. But yeah, but when I think what has happened is that for that last, you know, 10, 15 years, we as professionals have been lulled into a sense of security that this company was making us great things, and the secrecy wasn't that big a deal. It was a problem, and a lot of people have been complaining for a long time. Secrecy's bad. I have to have roadmaps. I have to know what's going to happen in the next 3 years. But we've been going, but it's okay. Final Cut's working. And now all of a sudden we're realizing, you know what, all those people that were saying, hey, the secrecy's really bad, I have to have a roadmap, we're starting to realize, wow, I didn't mind not having a roadmap if I liked the road you were on.
Yeah.
Right? But now all of a sudden I was like, holy crap, you've taken me headlong, full speed, and we've just left the pavement. And I need pavement to drive.
Right.
You know, and that's not cool. And I think that for the media professional, and you know, Richard, I agree with you. I have problems with the term professional, you know, whatever. But those of us who depend on our stuff to make a living at whatever level, we're starting to realize, this is not good. I need an alternative because I'm not happy not knowing where the road is going. That being said, and I go back to my previous statement, if you've never cut on Final Cut Pro 7 and you're just getting into this, I think you're going to dig Final Cut 10.
Okay.
But you don't have the same problems.
I want to hit that topic right there.
Let's hit it.
what I want to know is two things. Two things have come up now. So it's sounding like, let's assume that Final Cut Pro 10, sounds like everybody's in consensus, it's basically a new product. It's Apple starting over, and whether you want to believe Apple's marketing.
For the rest of the show, can we just call it Final Cut 10? That would make
Final
Chris
Cut 10,
happy.
That's fine. Final Cut 10, I'm willing to do that. Final Cut 10, right? New product, Apple is building something. I guess from my perspective, what I'm wondering is, you mentioned wanting to have this workflow of, it would have been nice, and I want to leave the "would it would have been nice" behind because we know Apple didn't do this, that if you had a path that you could continue on with Final Cut Pro 7 until they kind of built this new product. Apple generally doesn't do it that way. They say, nope, we're going down this new road. we've left the pavement over here, and that's what they did in this case.
Kind of. They not every time. If you look at historically the transition from iMovie 08 from iMovie HD, they actually shipped HD for a long time, for like 2 years or something.
And actually, I can continue to go back and forth between iPhoto and Aputure all day long. I could see the projects in both. I could browse. I could exchange files.
But all that aside, Adam, why don't you continue?
Yeah, I want to get to today, which is they didn't do that.
Correct.
With this product, they did not do that. They said, this is what we're doing. So the two things that I'm wondering about. One, what happens to existing customers who have built these workflows, who need their stuff to work? They have Final Cut Pro 7. Everybody's saying, oh, you guys are just whining. You continue to use Final Cut Pro 7. What happens to those people? Are they
going to
stick it out with Final Cut Pro 7 and wait for Apple to do something with Final Cut 10?
Here's the problem.
Or are they going to move someplace else?
Here's the problem with waiting out. And I think it was very telling that somewhere in the last 2 weeks, somebody said, well, Final Cut 7 is going to work fine in Lion. And that made me go, oh, crap. What about after Lion? Now, I'm already tired of Final Cut Pro 7 because, as Richard pointed out earlier, Final Cut 7 was a really anemic release. It was so bad. They had to cut the upgrade
from
$700 to $300 because they knew that giving me colored markers wasn't really worth a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that means that looking forward, if I have – and you know, I manage five systems that cut on Final Cut 7 right now. That means that I'm okay through Lion. Now, and obviously I don't want to stick with Final Cut 7 because I've been hating it for the last 12 months. So –
let's clarify why there's that hate so you understand this, Adam.
Well,
it's not that all of a sudden we said, oh, I don't like you anymore. You're slow, you're sluggish, you know, you're missing these features that everybody else has. You don't seem to like me anymore.
Yeah, it's a long, slow path, but you know, but we're sitting around waiting. Here it comes Final Cut 8, here comes what the hell,
right?
You know what? and so we get you know, just shocked by this. What happened to 8 and 9? I think I would have liked Final Cut 8. Jumping all the way to 10 is kind
of, you know, I'll pay $5,000 for Final Cut 8.
The reason why 7 is, you know, is starting to get painful and you're hating it so much is exactly the problem that Apple has. That this is an old code
it's
base.
It's 90s and, code. It's 20th century
and,
code.
And the reason that it couldn't grow faster is because it got increasingly harder, and I was a part of this sort of scenario. It got increasingly harder to figure out how it worked. I mean, figure out, you know, and the people that wrote the original code are no longer around, and it's, you know, it's like
Band-Aids and bubblegum only go so far.
Exactly.
To
rooms in your house that you haven't visited in ages. So, you know, I mean, Apple had the same problem that everybody was having with it, which is it was older and slower.
Yeah,
and they
had
to make the break. They had to rewrite it.
I've never written a line of code in my life, and yet even I understand that. But at some point you go, you know, did we really need to change every keyboard shortcut? I mean, there's a lot of little problems. That's besides the point. The question is, where do you go from here? Well, you might stick with your Final Cut 7 for a while, but you're going to have to – eventually you're going to have an old machine in the corner that's still running an old copy of Snow Leopard or Lion, and everything else is going to be on House Kitty or whatever it is and whatever it's called in 5 years. You're going to have all those legacy projects. What you might do is, you know, hire an intern and have them XML everything out into something that, say, Premiere Pro or I guess Avid can read an XML file too, you know, can open, and then maybe you'll go that way. But I think that for some of us, you know, we're looking at, you know, what's the exit strategy, because we've been burned now. We've been burned pretty bad, and we're not necessarily ready to trust Apple taking us down the road without the map because we didn't like the last turn they took. And we don't know where they're going to go next.
Nope, because that's the way Apple works.
Let's talk about the new. So there really is. Do we don't know at this point what people who are in that whether we're calling them pros or high-end pros.
Oh, no, I've had a lot of communication with what people are going to do. You know, I've had tons of people reach out to me. I'm speaking at a panel here in D.C., you know, next week with a bunch of folks from, you know, Discovery Channel and other folks, and people are talking about it. And I'm hearing from TV stations, and I've heard, you know, I need to be clear and disclose. You know, my own company was built on Final Cut Pro. And it still is. And, you know, that's been the editing system we've used since day one. My company's 11 years old. You know, we were faced with get an Avid lease and take a second mortgage on my house when I started or go with Final Cut Pro. And, you know, it was bumblegum and rough spots and all sorts of weird things when we started it running. But, you know, we made it work. Mm-hmm. You know, where people are at now, you know, I've always done training on Adobe. And I used to be an Avid certified instructor. I'm certified to teach all of these. Part of my living is teaching people and doing workflow consultation. You know, I've gone into television stations and large associations and helped them figure out how do they do graphic-rich video workflows, you know. And so I've always had to know multiple people's products. And, you know, but my own shop ran on Final Cut forever. Well, about a year and a half ago, you know, I got nervous when it had been so long and Final Cut 7 was such a weak release. I said, well, you know what? I'm going to start to use Premiere Pro and I'm going to figure this out. And I know, Chris, you know, you've dabbled in it too. And, you know, we have both come to the conclusion in our minds that, you know, wow, I really like what Premiere Pro is doing and I like what Adobe's doing. You know, people have accused me of having some secret agenda against Apple. I don't. You know, I've always used Adobe and Apple's products hand in hand. I've always blogged about both. I've always taught both. I've always used both throughout my entire workflow. I am hearing from tons of folks that I respect who are editors, who are facility managers, and everything I have heard basically goes like this. Well, we already use Photoshop and After Effects, and Adobe's running this great half-off special, so I'm just going to buy that, and I'm going to dabble with Premiere Pro a little bit. It looks pretty easy to get my projects in. And, oh, look, Media Composer. Well, I used to use Media Composer. They're running specials. And, you know, and people, you know, not that there aren't other tools out there. You know, there's Vegas and there's other products. But I'm hearing from a ton of folks who are running both of those products and they're going, well, I'll figure it out. I mean, just like before, we would use Premiere Pro for about 10 to 15% of our projects, like DSLR workflow and some native editing where we needed to just work with the material without rewrapping it. And we'd use Final Cut because we had a lot of multi-camera work and it was a better multi-camera editor. Well, all of a sudden, you know, people are saying, well, why are you changing so quickly? Why are you jumping ship? You know, you're overreacting. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people are saying, well, what's clear to me is we're going to have Final Cut 7 around, as you said, Chris, you know, through Snow Leopard, you know, okay, it's got, or Lion. Okay, it's going to be around, it, you know, and, you know, we've got a year and a half or 2 years where we know it's going to keep working. And, but, you know, we have to start thinking about the future, and people are dabbling and trying. Major broadcasters have been going back to Avid and on to Premiere Pro. And let's be clear, you know, Apple paints it like they had 50% market share. They never had 50% market share of the video editing community when you start looking at different segments. You know, yeah. Avid was a very big player. Premiere had tons of installs, you know, especially when you look at Creative Suite and everything else out there. You know, there is no person, there is no product that has 50% market share in the video editing space. It's not like Photoshop or something like that.
It just depends on when you stop counting.
Oh, correct.
Stop.
So I think that what's clear here is that people are going, wow, this company that I built my infrastructure around, you know, and Ron, you said it, you know, like, well, you know, this is obvious. You're just figuring this out now that this is how Apple runs their company. It is obvious to many of us, but all of a sudden it just became really obvious to a lot more people. And those people that it became obvious to kind of just found out that their wife was cheating on them and they're a little pissed off. You know, it's like,
yeah. So the thing I'm wondering now, though, okay, so you're going to have all these people who use certain technologies, they're used to certain workflows, and now maybe they're moving back to Avid or over to Adobe Premiere Pro. Is this Apple doing its classic slash and burn kind of stuff where they say, you know what, we think we see the future and we think this is the future out here. We're looking 10 years forward. And the guy that's starting his company now, like you mentioned, you started yours on Final Cut Pro, what did you say, 12 years ago? Is there some guy now that's going, I'm going to build mine on Final Cut 10 and I'm going to ride the wave for Apple, and 12 years from now, that's Apple's going to be back where they were today.
I don't think that part really matters. I mean, none of us have any doubt that this is going to be a very good release for many folks, and it's going to make Apple a ton of money. Everybody seems to be in agreement on that, and even we agree. There's lots of great things in the product, you know, and there's a lot of things I really love. But you know, it's people at different points in their life. So you know, will this mature into a product that's perfectly capable for pro users? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I don't see a lot of the people like the broadcast stations or the film editors who were using this product, you know, being able to go, oh, you know what? I'll just switch to Final Cut 10, you know, for my next feature film or for this broadcast piece. So they are left without a choice because no matter, you know, for some people, editing is a religion, and for others, editing are just things, are systems and software that some accountant orders. So for the people who are, you know, buying the stuff at these things and, you know, doing the contracts and things, it's like, well, so this product is no longer available, and all right, well, let's just order a different product. You know, there's going to be a lot of places that change simply because, you know, I don't think some of these large places, these large shops like CNN that bought into Apple are going to be okay with this, oh, you mean we just installed all this software that you sold us at the previous conference and you told us how awesome it is, and now you tell us, well, it'll be ready in a couple of years?
Yeah, you got to kind of think about the IT guy, you know. I used to do a lot of training for like Microsoft and Novell and stuff back in the late 80s on satellite, via satellite television. And, you know, the old joke was, well, nobody ever got fired for buying Microsoft. And
that's quite true.
you might step out and say, well, I think really we should get some Macs around here, but you're going to have to defend your decision. And in the same way, let's talk about like the CNN and things like that, or the BBC, you know, they have to be able to defend their decision. And if they can't see that roadmap, that's a big deal for them. That's really a big deal for them. And now we've been burned.
Yeah, but, you know, I will say that at $300, you know, anybody who's doing editing work professionally, you know, that's just a few hours work.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that big a deal.
So it's kind of a no-brainer to say, well, we may as well have this editing system in-house. I mean, it's going to be great for certain types of jobs, and it's going to be great for getting lower-cost operators.
Except it can't see your storage systems that you might have, and you can't have both programs running at once, so let's go through the cost of setting
great
up a dual boot on every system.
I'm convinced that the first Final Cut 10 project that I cut for money will be something that a producer has started at home, and then he brings it in and goes, hey, can you polish this up?
Right, yeah. Right. And I think
it's going to happen.
And if anybody wants to pay us to use it, we will use it, you know, and just like we offer Avid and we, you know, and I mean, you know, we've got projects that we cut in ScreenFlow, you know, where like, you know, we use different tools for jobs. You know, I may have editing religion of what I choose to cut my own personal films or the documentary I'm working on in. That's my religion. On the other hand, you know, what it takes to feed my employees and keep the doors open, I will do what people need me to do. And whatever
to money, you're completely agnostic.
When it comes to money, I'm a socialist capitalist. I want the world to be a better place. I want people to be well informed. I want to be able to send my kids to college, and I want to be able to not lay off my employees. So that's all fine. You know, yeah. I got no problem with Final Cut 10 for what it does well.
Okay.
Yep. That's fine.
Let Adam talk.
No, that's fine. I think we can kind of wrap things up. We've gone about an hour or so, and I want to start doing that. And so you said in there, you know, there are some good things in there. So I want to end on a little bit of a positive note. I think overall we've got a better understanding of, you know, what all this means for the industry, what it means for professionals, non-professionals, and stuff like that. So what are the good things that are in there, and who do you guys see Final Cut Pro 10? I'm going to use Pro again now. Final Cut Pro 10. Who is this for, and is it a foundation that Apple can build on? And I'm assuming there's a future for it. It sounds like there's a huge market for this. It might just not be the
current market that Apple has. How about we each take, we will play ping pong, and each person says one thing that they like about it, and we'll go until we run out of things.
Perfect. you want to kick it off?
Sure. I think that it is a very intuitive project system for people who don't find editing intuitive. So for people who were always put off by editing or found it too complex. I think it's very friendly and approachable, and it's the same reason that I would use iMovie when back in my days of teaching college to teach new users the concept of editing video. And it's the same reason why I love iPhoto, and I teach tons of people to just use iPhoto because Photoshop can be too complex and Aperture could be too complex. So I think it is a very approachable product for many people, and it will help the video industry by creating more people who have a respect for video and want to make video. And that makes a healthier industry by having more people wanting to do it and creating stuff. That doesn't mean, you know, just like, you know, Apple Pages and Microsoft Word didn't kill the desktop publishing industry, you know, but it did make the pros have to work harder to be better. And it did create bigger gaps between pro and non-pro.
Very good point. Very good point. Chris?
I like the dark user interface.
It does make pretty screenshots.
It does make nice screenshots. You know, I think the thing, yeah, it's pretty. I think the thing that is the most interesting to me, although not something I have the time to dabble in, is the relationship between the new version of Motion, which we haven't even talked about. But all of the rigging and the ability to build templated graphics and templated effects that have limited controls at the editor's side is kind of nice when you're acting like sort of a faux art director and you don't want every editor to be able to screw up every element.
And we kind of had that before, but it's much better now.
It's really elegant now. And it's, you know, I mean, you kind of have to be Mark Spencer to really get it. But and if you don't know Mark Spencer, he's a motion guru here in the San Francisco Bay Area. But I think that's very interesting. It's
and
very
for the
advanced.
Record, I love the new Motion.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting facet to it. So I'm slapping the ball back to you.
And Motion's a separate product, right? It's a separate download.
$50, yes. Yeah.
And
it used to be part of the suite.
Can it be? And it can be run standalone for the stuff that it does.
Yep.
Yes.
Cool. Ron, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would sort of compare this Final Cut Pro X or Final Cut X or 10 or whatever we're going to call it. I would look at it in the context of what Aperture did, in the sense that I think it is going to target a similar sort of demographic, which is a range, a broad range, hopefully, of people from the aspiring amateur all the way up through a certain level of professional. Mm-hmm. I would claim that Aperture can go all the way up to as high a level as you want, whereas Final Cut Pro X maybe can't. But I think, you know, what Aperture did was really force Adobe's hand, for one thing. You know, Lightroom came out as a response to Aperture. And
well, they were both, to be clear, both Lightroom and Aperture were in development at the same time.
Correct.
It wasn't like Aperture came out and Lightroom, oh, let's make Lightroom.
Absolutely, but there was also the sense within Adobe, and I, you know, I've talked to people over there, that they weren't quite sure what Lightroom was going to be or when it was going to release. It was still a little bit more tenuous, and I think Apple really forced Adobe's hand, probably in terms of price point as well as in terms of release date for when that came out. But clearly, you know, it was sort of an obvious space that was, you know, that raw workflow was an obvious thing that needed to be addressed. But I really think that Apple drove the industry in a certain direction with that, that, you know, Adobe was obviously right there, just as evinced by the fact that they were able to come out with it very quickly. So I would think that, you know, this is going to do some of the same things, and that it will, it'll certainly keep a constant pressure on a price point. It will introduce features that will have to be addressed by other manufacturers. And, you know, overall, I think it's a win. I mean, certain people are going to hit pain, but I think overall it's a win for the industry in general because it pushes the boundaries in certain areas, really introduces a pretty strong workflow at a very competitive price point. And I think it's a good thing overall.
One of the things that I like about it, and this is actually something that Avid and Adobe have been doing for a while, is the previous version of Final Cut, because of its code and everything else, was not very efficient at taking advantage of the power of your computer. And instead, you know, the going to ProRes was often about, oh, we don't need as beefy of a machine because that load could be offloaded to the hard drives. You know, the fact now that it does support native editing in many ways, not as many as it should, in my opinion, and not to the same level that some other products do, but it's a step in the right direction. And the fact that it is embracing this idea of if you have a beast of machine, you're going to get beast performance, you know, I think that's really good. You know, this is a true 64-bit app, and we haven't had very many other true 64-bit apps from Apple before, prior to this. You know, people, what's the difference between 32-bit and 64-bit? Well, it's a huge difference in performance. So
32.
You know, yeah. So, good which answer. Is a lot more.
My rough calculations here, I am coming up at 32.
It's far more than double, though. It's, that's people think, oh, it's just double the performance. It's a lot more than that. So I think it's what's good is they're finally embracing modern architecture, modern hardware. So that's really good. And, you know, that's going to allow people to ultimately do more with less waiting. You know, it has a lot of background processing. Some of it is good, some of it's bad. It does a lot of things for you. So if you found media management and codecs and transcoding and setting up your hard drives and striping things and getting it all organized difficult, well, that's great. This is so much easier. I think it takes the approach of media management and it tries to do the same thing that Aperture does by default and that iPhoto does by default, which is I'm going to target your home folder and we're going to keep everything beautifully organized on your computer. And for many people, that's a good thing because that's the same computer that's being backed up to Time Machine and, you know, it's going to help them. But I think, you know, just as Aperture has really good support for external libraries and multiple libraries and really good media management tools, I don't think this current version of Final Cut embraces that. It's much more iPhoto-like where everything wants to live on your drive. And for many users, that's a damn good thing. But for many more, that's a damning thing.
Yeah, that sounds like something long-term that might have to get changed.
Yeah,
well, I think people are going to find they're going to get three or four projects done, and they're going to go, "Why is my hard drive full?"
Yeah, they're not going to realize all that stuff.
iMovie all the time. Sorry.
Yeah, to be fair, I think a lot of those things, you know, many of them can be remedied. And that's going to come out in the training. That's going to come out, you know, in the next weeks as people go, oh, gee, the home folder, bummer. You know, and you can work around that. But, you know, it's just,
it's painful.
Yeah, it is. It's very painful. And frankly, I still would love to sit down with somebody and say, you know, why did you change Control V to Command V? Seriously, you know, I mean, there's so many of those. And I'd love to know the logic behind it. And I don't think anybody just, you know, threw darts at the keyboard shortcut board and said, oh, let's put it there. But I'd like to understand the logic. And I don't know, maybe they're using Avid keyboard shortcuts because
as soon as you just accept it's a completely new product and you said it right, you know, it's a completely new product. I mean, the big thing here that I think gets lost and forgotten is what about Final Cut Express, right? We had, let's just take a real quick step back in history. I'll go really fast at this. We had iMovie and we had Final Cut Express and we had Final Cut Pro. Final Cut Express was originally a $399 product, right? Or a $499 product. And then it kept going down in price. And the goal was to convert all of these iMovie people to Final Cut Express. Well, then, you know, we completely rebranded iMovie with a new tool. And the new iMovie was supposed to be just a utility for quickly making your first cut. And it even exports out to Final Cut Pro. The current iMovie can go to Final Cut Pro. Well, they decided they liked it so much that they made it the replacement for iMovie. That's not what it was originally designed for. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so we got a whole new iMovie and we killed off a bunch of these third-party tools and plugins and everything else. And I bet a bunch of people are going to buy Final Cut Express because they want to move up through the Apple ecosystem. Oh, wait, no one's buying Final Cut Express. Well, we'll lower the price. Oh, wait, no one's still buying it. Okay, well, here it's really simple. There's not room for three products. There's room for two. And so the Final Cut Pro 10 is really, in my mind, the successor to Final Cut Express. And it has some of the features that Final Cut Pro had that pros want, and it will eventually become that tool that pros want, the high-end pros and the people who have pro needs, not just high-end pros. But I am a lot, I feel a lot better about the product when I think of it as Final Cut Express 10. And it's like, okay, this is not iMovie Pro. This really is a great replacement for Final Cut Express, and it's a nice suite with three apps, and it does a good job, and it's really useful, and it's much more friendly, and it's not too hard, and it's going to grow over time. If that's okay with you and where you're at, you will freaking love this product. But if you just keep thinking that there's going to be magical updates that are going to come out for free every few weeks, you're delusional.
Yeah.
I think that's a great probably place to end this, because I think my audience
about being delusional.
Group that's going to be about being delusional. No, just to end the conversation about where I think we've been able to sort of explain what this transition has meant and maybe demystify, you know, and put the products in perspective. And I like that concept of, you know, this really does feel either like a new product or an upgrade to Express, because everything that I've been reading and hearing, especially from the pro community, that is probably a pretty good description of it. Would you guys agree with that? Anybody disagree with that? I'm going to take the chirps to mean no.
No, I would agree. I think it's a good product. If you are new to editing, I think you're going to enjoy Final Cut 10.
Great.
If you've been doing it for a long time and you know your way around Final Cut 7, you're going to be stubbing your toe on a lot of menus and a lot of, you know, problems. Yeah. But there's, let's face it, I think those of us who are really, really comfortable in Final Cut 10, 7 and use the hell out of it, we're the minority, and we were deemed as less important than the masses, and that's kind of a bummer, and it means we're going to have to change our ways, and that might be what has to happen.
And Apple's done that before to not just they've done it in lots of areas, and so,
and everybody's done that before,
just
right?
The other day I tried to go out and buy a brand new Apple ADB mouse and was sorely disappointed. Apparently everything is USB now, or this thing called Bluetooth, and I was sad. Yep.
Well, I think that's exactly right. You know, every company has to do this, and I think a lot of people do make the mistake that Apple is somehow their friend, and you know, my buddy Steve is going to take care of me, and it's a business, it's a smartly run business, and I really do think they, you know, provide a lot of value for, especially for the money.
Hey guys, I'm checking something online here. Just saw an update from Apple. Apparently, you will be able to buy Final Cut 7. The downside is it comes on floppy disks. Sorry.
Good luck installing it. Yeah, right. I want to thank you guys for coming on and chatting with us. This really was informative for me, and I think everybody listening is going to really appreciate it. So let me just go around, and if you have anything that you want to plug, let people know where they can find you, if you're on Twitter, what have you, if you want to give that out. And I'll just go the same order as we introduced you. So Richard, where can people kind of keep up with what you're up to?
My company's name is Red Pixel, REDPIXEL, and I'm on Twitter with that, and you know, all sorts of other places. So, and the blog is just Richard Harrington Blog. There's more than 1,000 entries, hundreds of pages of articles and tutorials. Download for free. You know, I come from a family of teachers, so basically, I do my day job, and then I come home each night, and I do about an hour, 2 hours of either writing or geek blogging. So. I'm easy to find. Type my name in any place like Amazon or YouTube or iTunes, and you'll find lots of free stuff and lots of paid stuff that's, I think, is useful. And that's me.
And you do some podcasting as well, right?
Yeah, I got tons of video out there. Right now, we have a bunch of Final Cut 7 podcasts over at Creative Cow. I've also been doing Premiere Pro ones, Photoshop ones, and DSLR video workflow, which will also address the new Final Cut. And we're working on books right now for DSLR folks for both Premiere Pro and Final Cut Pro 10. Those will be coming out in the fall. And, you know, I release about 3 books a year just to help people out. So, you know, I don't know. It's a weird sense of Catholic guilt and karma. But everything I learn, I feel the need to write down and share, which is probably a stupid business model. But so far, it's worked.
Yeah, it's good stuff over there. So people should check it out. I've been enjoying reading it. Ron Brinkman?
Yeah, I mean, the blog post that I did on this whole fiasco, if you will, is on my blog, which is digitalcomposting.com. Although you can probably just Google search for Ron Brinkman, and it'll show up somewhere in there. I do a regular podcast on the This Week in Photography. I'm a regular guest on there, I guess.
Great show.
Which is, you know, we kind of talk about all things photography related and have a lot of fun with that. And then I guess, well, I do have a book out there if any of you are visual effects people, a book on compositing. And
great
then I
book.
Guess, thank you. And then I guess Twitter, which is just at Ron Brinkman. It's RONBRINKMANN. Don't forget the all critical second N on the end of Ron Brinkman.
I'm also on Google. Is the single N Ron Brinkman a little less savory than you? Or
yes, we stay away from that single N Ron Brinkman. He's, you know. No. But yeah, so that's probably, I mean, I'm on Twitter fairly regularly, so that's probably a good way to get an idea of what I'm talking about. And I'm also on Google Plus, but I have no idea how that works for telling people.
Yeah, me neither. So I'd love to hang out, but I don't know how to hang out.
I don't know how to hang out in Plus. And so then Chris?
You can find me at chrisfenwick.anything. Chrisfenwick.com, my blog where I do tutorials and share silly things I see on the internet. Chris Fenwick on the Twitter. And, you know, I've decided the Saturday after Final Cut 10 was released, I did a thing. I called it Editor's Powwow. And we basically just did a webcast from one of our edit suites. I had some local editors come and visit me in Oakland, sitting down with the software. And we basically sat around and whined and pissed and moaned for 2.5 hours. But we're gonna do it again. And I'm going to offer up some things that I've been discovering about how you know, some things about organizing projects and stuff. And I think we're going to do that again. I haven't set a time for that, but if you watch me on Twitter and on my blog and stuff, I'll pimp that thing out. So, and literally, I mean, we invited, you know, some local editors from the Bay Area to come and just hang out. And, it was a lot of fun. It was kind of live studio audience type thing. So, I'm going to do that in the next couple of weeks. Don't know exactly when, but
okay, cool. So watch your Twitter feed for that. That sounds great.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I think that'll do it for this time. I might have to get you back on here at some point in the future because this was a great conversation. So thank you.
It'd be great.
Thanks for having us.
Take care.
There you go. That is some great thoughts and insight on Apple's latest release of Final Cut, what it means for Apple, what it means for the Apple Mac community, and also for the future of Apple in the video markets. I hope you really enjoyed that. I want to say thanks once again to Ron, Chris, and Richard. I really enjoyed having them on. You know, after I recorded this, I was starting to think that I might need to do a follow-up episode for you, get some of the amateur pro hobbyist type folks in here to give their insight, and they might have a little bit of a different perspective. So I might put together that as a future episode. So if you think you might have interest in a show like that, please send me an email. Let me know. Before I leave you, I do want to thank all of my show sponsors for the month. Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze and PowerSave Mac. You can check out their software and get free trials over at phoronix.com. Gazelle is a great place to get rid of your old electronics, maybe get some cash back. They have an easy search that you do on the site. You get an upfront offer, and they pay for the shipping. So it couldn't be easier. Good alternative to using auction and classified sites. You can get more information and details at gazelle.com. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. Check out their software, get more information, view some of those tutorials, and really see how it might fit into your workflow. You can get all of that stuff over at circusponies.com, and they do have free trials available. And also Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label. These are all products that I use and absolutely love. They are essential to my workflow and great stuff. You can get more information and details and trials over at smilesoftware.com. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. A big thank you to you for your support of the show. If you'd like to support the show even more, you might consider becoming a MacCast member. I actually just put out an episode all about preparing for Lion. So if you've been wondering some of the steps and things that you should take, that is in the latest episode of the member show. You heard a little sample also last week of the kind of content that you can get. So if you haven't listened to that, you might take a listen, and that gives you an idea of what to expect. And all for just a couple bucks a month. You know, depending on which plan you pick, I have 6-month, yearly, or month-to-month plans. Works out to about $4 a month. So a little bit of money goes a long way to help support the show. And I really appreciate everybody who's become a MacCast member. That's going to do it for today. If you have any feedback for me, if you're enjoying these episodes, you'd like to hear more, there's a certain topic or question you have for a future episode of the MacCast, send along your emails. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. I also welcome audio comments. Just attach an MP3. A lot of people just use the voice recorder on their iPhone, their iPod Touch. It works great. You can just email directly from that. So if you have a thought, you know, talk it out and send it along to me. I really like getting those, and you might hear yourself on the MacCast. You can also leave voicemail, so if you prefer just to call in, just call the listener hotline, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. You can leave a voicemail message there, or on Skype. My Skype name is The MacCast. There's voicemail there. That's a great way if you're an international listener and you want to save on some long-distance charges. Just bring me up on Skype, and you can leave a voicemail on that service as well. So those are all the ways to contact me. If you need more information about anything that I've covered on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find details in the show notes and the posts at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. Great online community of MacCast listeners who chat about all things Mac between shows, and check that out if you haven't done that before. And a couple other places online that I post stuff: my Twitter feed, twitter.com/MacCast, or over on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast is the Facebook community for the MacCast. So you can check out those locations as well. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.